Ontario voters speak. A surprise majority for the Liberals. What it all means federally, and how did the pollsters get it so wrong? Plus, the official opposition on the hook for over $1 million. Let's get started here on Question Period.
The total costs associated with these NDP mailings was $1.17 million.
The House of Commons committee that doles out perks and cash says NDP MPs broke the rules over mailing privileges.
The leader of the NDP should return the improper funds that his party took on mailings and offices.
The NDP says it's a smear campaign.
We will now have to fight this process by a partisan secretive body.
Two dozen MPs, including leader Tom Mulcair, will have to pay back a total of $36,000 to the Commons. The rest, $1.13 million, is to be paid to Canada Post. At issue, 1.8 million letters sent by the NDP to 26 ridings. The NDP call them information letters and use House of Commons postage. MPs are allowed to send letters to communicate with constituents, but can't campaign using taxpayer dollars. The mailings had the NDP logo and directed people to the party's website, which is a no-no. Elections Canada is investigating the mailings, and Transport Minister Lisa Raitt says she'll ensure the NDP repays Canada Post.
They take it very seriously, and they will be developing a plan to deal with the situation.
For more on this, I'm joined now by Conservative MP Blake Richards in Calgary. Here in studio with me, Liberal MP Wayne Easter and the NDP House Leader Peter Julian. So, Mr. Julian, are you going to pay back that nearly $1.2 million?
Well, if a bunch of Conservatives came to your house at midnight and demanded money, you'd probably ask for due process.
Wait, what happened? The Liberals, too. They're part of that as well.
Oh, the Liberals are the best friends of Mr. Harper in this regard. But what we've been saying all along is, number one, let's look at the mailing programs of each party. Up the Conservatives and a vicious partisan attack on Tom Mulcair here. The Liberals and a vicious personal attack on one of the NDP MPs here. An NDP mailing talking about healthy environment.
Let me stop you right there. I'm going to ask Mr. Easter, because that's all true. They all did that.
Yeah.
But that was before the Board of Internal Economy banned them from doing this. They stopped doing it. You still continued. Is that all right?
Let's get to the heart of the issue here. I know what the NDP is trying to do. They're trying to paint this as a partisan attack, a gang up by the other parties in the NDP. This happened after 2011. It happened, and the nonpartisan parliamentary staff. You know, Audrey O'Brien is beyond reproach.
And Audrey O'Brien is the clerk of the House of Commons.
She's
nonpartisan.
She is the clerk of the House of Commons.
Why won't you?
They have provided information. They have put it to the Board of Internal Economy. And the parties, the internal Board of Internal Economy has made a decision. This is a decision. It's not about partisan politics. The board would not allow,
and Wayne knows this, the board would not allow the House administration to look at Conservative or Liberal mailings. The other reality, Bob, is we've been asking the Auditor General to come in. Last fall we said the Auditor General should be looking at parliamentary expenses. Liberals and Conservatives said no. In the spring, we did the same thing. We want the Auditor General to come in, so it's not partisan, it's an independent arbitration.
Peter, you can't talk
and Wayne
me down,
cannot
Peter,
deny.
Peter,
just wait, let
is,
him have a.
That is beside the point.
It's not
the rules
the
were
point.
Changed in 2011 because this stuff was happening. Those mailings under these rules couldn't be made. They could be made
these
at that time.
All
now what you're trying to do is reinvent history. The mailings you put out are wrong. You've been found guilty. Rather than continuing to fight the issue, you just should say, okay, we made a mistake. A lot of young people, new people in our party, the administration has decided, based on the facts that you're right. We're not afraid of anything.
Well, then allow the Auditor General to come in independently.
The Board of Internal Economy has made a decision based on the rules.
Okay, now hang on a sec, guys.
Just admit it.
Hang on a sec. Hang on. I have a question I want to put to Blake Richards in Calgary. And I think the NDP have a valid point on this. Why did the minister responsible for Canada Post, Lisa Raitt, the transport minister, call up on Thursday the head of the Canada Post and say, make sure you go after the NDP and recover that million dollar plus that they say they owe? It looks like it was a witch hunt, because she always says when it comes to Canada Post, at its arm's length. We can't get involved with anything. But when it becomes to an issue like the NDP being found apparently having to pay this money back, she makes it very partisan. It looks like a witch hunt.
Well, Bob, if I can, just before I get to that response for you, I would like to just jump in a bit on the exchange that just happened as well, because I find it really troubling to listen to the NDP sit here and try to claim somehow that they're hard done by in all this. I mean, the reason why the Board of Internal Economy, with the advice from the independent, nonpartisan administration of the House of Commons, has looked at their mailouts is because they were the ones that were breaking the rules. They're not being singled out here because someone just chose to single them out. They're being singled out because they're the only ones who broke the rules. So, fess up for the fact that you've broken the rules. Stop trying to make excuses and just repay taxpayers their money. Now, as far as the question that you've asked here, Bob, as well, I mean, obviously what's happened here is, they found that of this $1.17 million that the NDP has been found to have misused, there's, $1.13 million, of course, of that is resources that have been provided by taxpayers through Canada Post. What the minister did is to simply make a phone call to Canada Post and just ask them about their plans in terms of what they were going to do to try to seek the money being
inappropriate.
Paid. There's just a simple question being asked, put to
completely
them to determine what their plans were in terms of trying to repay the money.
But,
they've indicated that they do take this very seriously, and they do think that they need to do everything they can to try and have the money repaid.
Mr. Richards, it gave the sense here that you were being tainted, that the process so far had been looked to be fair and open and transparent about what the NDP did. Mm. And then you have the minister strong-arming Canada Post to go after the NDP, and a lot of people out there are probably wondering, wait, maybe the NDP have a point here that this is a witch hunt.
I don't think that's a fair characterization, Bob. I think what it boils down to here is, there's a concern we're expressing on behalf of taxpayers. I mean, their money has been misused. These taxpayers work hard for this money, and the NDP has taken it and they've misused it. And so what we've done is we've just asked Canada Post about their plans to try and recover that money. I wouldn't consider that as any kind of pressure. That is just simply a call from a minister to determine what their plans were to repay
taxpayers. Mr. Easter, I want to ask you about that. Would you have done that?
No, I really do believe that the minister made an error in judgment here. I don't think it was appropriate for her to call. I think this should have been left with the Board of Internal Economy. I think eventually I would hope that the NDP would look at this and see it for what it is. A mistake has been made, and they should figure it away. Now, how do we work with the Board of Internal Economy, Canada Post and others, to pay this money back? And to redress this concern, and for all of us to see that this kind of thing doesn't happen again. The rules were changed in 2011 to clarify.
You're right on that.
Those kind of handouts, printouts, don't happen. And
they do.
And you will find
those.
You will find those.
They do.
You will find those are
Joyce
very.
Murray
you will find
Sean
those
Casey
are very
admitted
partisan.
To it.
But
and
these,
admitted
but
to
the
it.
Ads of the NDP, different from
don't
even the partisan attack ads, were more leaning towards. To the electoral side, which goes even further against the rules than just strictly a partisan.
So why don't you do the right thing and simply say, we're going to pay back the money, we won't do this again, and walk away from it?
We've said, bring in the Auditor General. Let's have an independent evaluation of all three parties' mailings.
There
and
was
liberals
an
and conservatives refused.
The House administration.
And the House administration was not permitted to look at the conservative or liberal mailings. Sean Casey admitted last
because
week
you're
on
the
television
ones that, broke the rules,
that
Peter.
What the liberal mailings did is contravened the rules if they did the same thing that the NDP mailings did. And what we said was, we followed the rules, like the Liberals. The Liberals were unable to explain why they wouldn't allow their mailings to be analyzed by the House administration.
It's
and they haven't been able to say why they're refusing to have the Auditor General come in, an independent entity that's not partisan the way the Liberals and Conservatives are. They play very partisan politics. But what they have against bringing the Auditor General in, they have failed to explain to anybody. And as far as the minister is concerned, the minister has repeatedly said she has nothing to do with Canada Post. 5 million homes are going to lose mail delivery. She can do nothing about that. It's an independent Crown corporation. And then she makes what is a completely inappropriate call on the witch hunt against the NDP.
Bob,
and the Liberals
Bob,
and Conservatives
Bob,
say
this
that's
is an
fine.
Opportunity. This is an opportunity for the NDP to show leadership on an issue that they've been found guilty on. You know, as a former Solicitor General, there's all kinds of people in prisons across this country who have claimed they were innocent, but there they are in the prison. And in this case, I think you got a fair trial with
we
the Board of Internal
with
Economy.
A very partisan group, so
and
out
the
of
fact
general.
Of the matter is, this is an opportunity for McClare to show leadership and say, look, this was wrong, the rules were changed, and find a way to pay the money back. Work with the Board of Internal Economy and do that.
The NDP can try to spin this however they want, but they can repeat the spin over and over and over again, but it doesn't make it truthful. The bottom line is that they are the ones who have broken the rules. The rules were always there. They were always very clear. The NDP broke them. They knew they were breaking them, and now they're trying to make all kinds of excuses and trying to blame everybody but themselves. The bottom line is here, and I think what I should do is just bring a message here to Thomas Mulcair and the NDP. This message is from taxpayers. You broke the rules. You knew that you broke the rules. Now it's time to stop making excuses and just repay that money to hardworking Canadians that you owe them that you misused.
All right. On that note, gentlemen, thank you very much. This story will not be going away. We'll have you back.
Bring in the Auditor General, Bob. Bring in the Auditor General.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We'll dig into this more with a scrum coming up later in the show. But first, Ontario votes for a Liberal majority. What happened to the PC party and why were the pollsters so wrong? We check in with our Ontario election reporters on Question Period coming up next. It was hailed as a surprise win for the Ontario Liberals on Thursday night. After the votes were tallied, a majority government for Kathleen Wynne. Wynne became Ontario's first elected female premier.
With this mandate, I will fight for every person in this room and every person that I have met across the province and the millions that I may never meet. But I will fight for them every day to make sure that they have access to the opportunity and security that they richly deserve. And I will work every day to earn and keep the confidence of the people of Ontario.
For more on the Ontario election results, I'm joined by our regular Ontario reporters, CTV's Paul Bliss at Queen's Park in Toronto and Robert Benzie from the Toronto Star. So first question to you, Paul. Some of the polls were certainly dead wrong. Nobody had predicted, very few had predicted there was going to be a Liberal majority. Whereas Wynne's team, as surprised as most of us were on Thursday night when they eked out this big majority?
Pardon the pun, Bob. I think the majority of Liberals were shocked by the majority that they walked away with. They were anticipating perhaps that they might eke out a minority. I was told after the vote that there was some inside polling the Liberals had done that indicated they might get a majority situation. But for the most part, everybody was stunned by the results of this election, likely due to the fact that after 11 years of Liberal government and multiple scandals and hikes in taxes, they really didn't think that there'd be an appetite to send them back here with a clear mandate like this.
Well, Bob, I mean, and usually governments defeat themselves, and it certainly looked like at the start of the campaign that the Liberals were going to be defeated. But then I guess Tim Hudak, the progressive conservative leader, he just sunk. I mean, he sunk the party, didn't he?
Well, I mean, Mr. Hudak ran on this very bold so-called million jobs plan to create a million public sector job or private sector jobs over 8 years. And it sounded good the first day that he talked about it, and the first week, in fact, I would argue that he defined the campaign. But then he decided that because he wanted to balance the books a year earlier than the Liberals, who are running huge deficits, he would have to eliminate 100,000 public service positions. There's 1.2 million people working in the broader public service in Ontario, you know, nurses, teachers, police officers, firefighters, and so on. And I think when you tell people that you're going to get rid of 100,000 of them, that gets folks nervous, so that every one of those 1.2 million people was probably a bit spooked by that.
So
the Liberals pounced on that.
So, Paul, you were at Hudak headquarters on Thursday night. It was a pretty dismal, virtually empty hall, and he came in and he announced that he was going to resign. What's next for the party, who is going to lead it, or will he stay on for a year or so and wait until after, say, the federal election, and maybe some people here will run for the leadership?
It's possible. Certainly they hope that somebody prominent and liked by the public will run. Their convention, I'm told, is likely going to be in the wintertime because it's cheaper to rent halls and they're probably short of money, and it's going to be harder to raise money now that they're in the doldrums for 4 years. But the Conservatives have a big problem in that they have to figure out what it is Ontarians want. If they can't win an election on the momentum of all of these scandals, a police criminal investigation into the Premier's office, then they have to figure out what's wrong. They presented in the last three elections a very softer side of the Conservatives. That didn't work. They presented Tim Hudak to the right and a hard Conservative. That didn't work. So the people who are in charge of the Progressive Conservative Party are not just going to have to find a new candidate, but also a platform that's going to appeal to Ontarians who seem to like the way things are.
Well, Bob, there is a lot to be said for that, because it looks like Progressive Conservative support is now sort of in the rural areas, where most people are now living in urban areas, and that's where the Liberals really won big.
Yeah, Bob, they were wiped out in, they lost their only seat in the city of Toronto. They lost seats in the suburbs, the 905 region around Toronto. They think they only have one left in that kind of belt. And yeah, it's a rural rump, and they have, you know, a couple seats in the Ottawa area. And in London, but that's about it. I mean, it's just in the Southwest, rather. They've got a big problem. And Paul's right; they've got a big money crisis. I hear that they're maybe $7 or $8 million in debt after this campaign. It's going to be very hard for them to raise money. Leadership races are expensive; they're debilitating. And how are you going to attract good people? Are you going to be able to get a Tony Clement from Ottawa, or a Lisa Raitt, or someone like that, a federal cabinet minister? Kelly Leach, if it's a four-year prospect? If it was a Liberal minority, I think you'd get a more A-list kind of group of candidates. But I don't know. I think that's going to be tough to attract, top talent, just by the nature of it being a four-year rebuilding process.
Okay, Paul, what about the NDP? I mean, Andrea Horvath triggered this election campaign, and she didn't win any more seats, and she lost her powerful role in a minority government. She's got the unions all mad at her. She's got part of her left wing mad at her. Can she hang in?
I don't know. I think she's got big problems. It's sort of the subheading and subtext of this election is that the NDP blew it. They blew it from so many perspectives, but they suffered a humiliating defeat. They had more power in the last 2 years here at Queen's Park because they controlled the minority government. They had the power to sit down with the Premier and negotiate for the budget and on important pieces of legislation. Now they're the third party. They're not going to be able to raise money, and they're the voice in the forest and in the wilderness. So this is just as devastating for the NDP, I think, as it was for the Conservatives. It's just because Tim Hudak has resigned and everybody thought the Tories were going to win that we're paying attention to that. But for Andrea Horvath, she's got some real problems internally and, of course, with voters.
And Bob, do you think that she can survive?
Well, the NDP doesn't throw their leaders out the way that the Liberals and the Tories tend to. So she probably can. But Paul's right. They've got big problems. They had five seats in the city of Toronto. Now they have two. So they lost three very, very key seats. Yeah. Veterans Michael Prue, Rosario Marchese, and newcomer Jonah Shine, who was seen as one of the guys who was a promising young guy. They got wiped off the map last Thursday night. And that's terrible for them. They are now a party more of the north. You know, they've got a couple of urban seats, but they're more a northern rump party as well. I mean, the Liberals are really the only party that represent Ontarians in every region, pretty much of the province. So this is and if you're a left-leaning voter, a progressive, you're probably pretty happy with Kathleen Wynne's Liberals. So why are you voting NDP? They've got a big problem too.
And so, Paul, the legislature is coming back, I understand, on July 2nd. You guys will, both you and Bob, will have to be working all summer in July.
Well, it's fun for us, and we don't mind. And actually, in the absence of a long-term leader for the Conservative Party, the press gallery, as you know, often ends up serving as an opposition to hold the government's feet to the fire, and certainly we're ready for that. It's going to be very interesting because the NDP might have to find their footing in this situation as well. Plus, there's a couple of criminal investigations underway into the Liberals, and they might drop any time.
Well, guys, I want to thank you for being on the question period throughout the election campaign. It's been a lot of fun. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
How far are First Nations in British Columbia willing to go to stop the Northern Gateway project? The president of the Union of BC Chiefs and a senior executive from Enbridge, the company behind the pipeline project, up next on Question Period. The government is expected to make its decision on the Enbridge Northern Gateway pipeline early this week. The project will pump Alberta crude from the oil sands through northern BC to Kitimat. Top business leaders, some Western premiers, and former cabinet ministers wrote an open letter on why the pipeline needs approval. They took out full-page ads in national newspapers to make their point. Joining us now from Calgary is Darcy Levesque, Vice President of Public and Government Affairs at Enbridge. Mr. Levesque, the big cabinet decision we expect this week, we're being told you'll get the green light to proceed, providing you meet all 209 conditions laid down by the National Energy Board. So how long will it take Enbridge to meet those conditions? A lot of them are environmental.
Well, Bob, we're currently working on what it will take to meet all 209 tough conditions, and that also includes the five conditions that have been established by the government of British Columbia. So in the days and months ahead, our experts and engineers are looking at each of the conditions with a view to how we can best meet them to build a safe and better pipeline for Canada.
On the face of it, it looks like you've met all the conditions, the five conditions that the British Columbia government wanted, except for how do you dealing with First Nations? And so how can you build a pipeline if you can't get the First Nations, particularly those along the coastal, the coastal bands to go along with the pipeline?
Well, first of all, Bob, clearly we have more work to do, and when we received a positive recommendation from the Joint Review Panel in December of last year, we also committed to re-engaging with some First Nations, and Jim Prentice, for example, really helped open up a new dialogue with many of those First Nations, and we're very committed to building on the progress that he made in the days and months ahead. That said, we're also very proud of the fact that we currently have equity agreements with 26 Aboriginal partners along the right-of-way. In fact, their First Nations and Métis communities represent over 60% of the Aboriginal population along the proposed right-of-way. But do we have more work to do? Absolutely. And that's part of our commitment going forward.
So I gather the understanding here is that you can't go ahead with a pipeline unless you get greater First Nations approval or involvement in this?
Well, clearly that is our goal, and as I said, we have made some progress. We remain committed to working with and to earning the trust and respect of other First Nations along the right-of-way. We know that's a long process, but we're very committed to doing that because ultimately ensuring that First Nations have meaningful opportunities as true partners in this project is very important, and that's part of our commitment.
You mentioned Jim Prentice before he left to run for the Progressive Conservative leadership in Alberta. He had been hired by Enbridge to see if he could make some progress on that. Nobody else has subsequently been reappointed to take on that job, so where are we left?
Well, as I said, Jim Prentice did make some progress with respect to opening a dialogue with some First Nations, and he actually assembled an excellent team that continues to work on our behalf in opening up opportunities for new partnerships with other First Nations. So, again, we have more work to do there, and we remain committed to doing that. At the end of the day, though, as I said, we have 26 equity agreements currently, and we want to build on that progress going forward.
Now, you also have a lot of work to do with non-Aboriginal communities in BC. You know, we know there's an awful lot of opposition to the pipeline, particularly up in the area where the pipeline is going to be built. So what are you doing there?
Well, you know, we continue to engage and consult with British Columbians, and for that matter, all Canadians. And quite frankly, we're gratified that the input from all these stakeholders, it really helped us move forward and make considerable improvements to our project. That's resulted, for example, in over two dozen changes to our proposed route. It's input from stakeholders, for example, that has allowed us to move forward with a plan that would actually build our project on land, 70% of which is previously disturbed, limiting the environmental impact. That and many other improvements are a direct result of those consultations. Those consultations are ongoing. We remain committed to listening and to learning. And as a result of that, we believe ultimately that we're going to build and are capable of building a world-class project.
Now, both the federal Liberals and the NDP oppose this pipeline. How worried is Enbridge that the deal could get killed if the Harper Conservatives lose next year's election?
Well, clearly, Bob, Canadians have divergent views on this project. In fact, that would apply to almost any energy project in Canada today. It's very difficult, I suspect, to get 100% or absolute approval from all Canadians. That said, we believe that most fair-minded Canadians recognize that it's critical that we open up new markets for our most valuable commodity, crude oil. The Canadian Chamber of Commerce, for example, has estimated that Canadians lose billions of dollars each and every year because we only have one market for our product, that is the United States. And so this, I think most Canadians understand and appreciate that it is imperative that we do open those new markets and that we create the thousands of jobs and the economic opportunities that will come from this project.
Mr. Levesque, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks very much, Bob.
Well, Mr. Levesque says Enbridge has opened a meaningful dialogue with BC First Nations. Joining me now from Vancouver, Grand Chief Stuart Phillip, President of the Union of BC Chiefs. So, Chief Phillip, is that true?
No, absolutely not. Nothing could be further from the truth. In many ways, the Enbridge file is a case study in how not to engage First Nations people.
Now, Enbridge's Mr. Levesque also says that former Harper Cabinet Minister Jim Prentice, who is now seeking to become Alberta Premier, had made a lot of progress with First Nations on the pipeline. Is that true?
Again, that's not true. Mr. Prentice was here for a short while, and, you know, in spite of donning the buckskin vest, so to speak, the opposition to the Enbridge's Northern Gateway Pipeline proposal is deeply entrenched. Not only First Nations people, but British Columbians carry some very grave concerns with respect to the risks attached to this heavy oil pipeline proposal.
Well, Enbridge says they have 26 equity agreements with First Nations in British Columbia. Is that significant or not?
No. Been hearing these types of rumors now for a couple of years, and I can tell you with great certainty that the opposition here in British Columbia is very broad-based and widespread. Again, it's British Columbians as well as First Nations people. Many of the recent polls have upheld the steadfast opposition to Enbridge's Northern Gateway Pipeline proposal.
Okay, then, what will BC First Nations do if, as expected, the Harper government approves Northern Gateway next week or this week?
Well, it's very predictable. As we've heard from First Nations leaders throughout the last couple of years, that in the event that the National Energy Board fumbles the ball, which they did with their 209 conditions, that this matter would move into the courts. We would be looking toward protracted litigation. Anywhere from 10 to 12 lawsuits are being contemplated, and we'll move through that phase of this battle. And there are workshops taking place vis-a-vis civil rights and legal rights with respect to arrest procedures.
So how far will we go? Are we talking about possible civil disobedience?
Yes, absolutely. There's no question about that. That's been part of the public dialogue out here in British Columbia. There has been countless marches and rallies and demonstrations throughout the last number of years. The position of British Columbians and First Nations is abundantly clear that we oppose Northern Gateway's Enbridge pipeline proposal, given the enormous risks attached to this proposal.
But it doesn't seem that the Harper government is listening if, as we all expect, it's going to go ahead and approve this pipeline.
No, not surprisingly, that characterizes the Harper government's, in many ways, their very thuggish approach to democracy, and we fully expected the Harper government to make every effort to ram this project through. But again, the opposition, there's enormous solidarity here in British Columbia between First Nations people, British Columbians, Canadians, and we'll do what's necessary and whatever it takes to stop this project.
And does that include Premier Christy Clark? Is she on side with you?
Well, it's well known that the provincial government has put forward the five conditions, and needless to say, the proposal, Enbridge's proposal, has not met the five conditions. One of those conditions, of course, being a successful and effective dialogue with First Nations. That hasn't happened. There's the whole issue of benefits. There are no benefits attached to this to speak of. It just carries the risk vis-a-vis pipeline ruptures. This line traverses thousands of kilometers of a very crucial watersheds, rivers and streams that are essential to our wild salmon fishery, not to mention the tanker traffic along the coast. A tanker spill would be catastrophic to the marine life along the coast. So there's, again, there's just enormous opposition to this ill-conceived heavy oil pipeline proposal.
So how far would First Nations be prepared to go to stop this pipeline?
Well, I think that, again, it's not First Nations alone. It's British Columbians and First Nations and Canadians. There's not a great deal of support for expansion of the tar sands itself. There are underlying issues of climate change, global warming, and I think this is going to represent a watershed moment in the history of this country with respect to the Harper government and with respect to all of the issues attached to these ill-conceived heavy oil pipeline proposals here in British Columbia.
Well, Grand Chief Philip, thank you very much for coming on and to give us your viewpoint. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
The NDP on the hook for over $1 million. How bad will that hurt the party? And can they fight the charges in court? Our scrum weighs in next on Question Period. An unhappy-looking speaker there, chants directed at the NDP of pay it back, pay it back. Well, you know you're near the end of the session when the kids act like they're out of, the MPs are, they act like they're out of kindergarten. Joining me for the scrum, Althea Raj from the Huffington Post, Gloria Galloway from the Globe and Mail, the Dean of the Parliamentary Press Gallery, Mr. Oliver, and Tawna McCharles from the Toronto Star. So the big story this week has been the NDP, Althea. They've been told they have to pay back nearly $1.2 million, over $1 million of that to the Canada Post. They say they're not going to pay it back. And their explanation for why, what, claiming that they didn't do anything wrong when in fact the evidence shows that they did.
Yeah, they did do something wrong. And their evidence is, well, everyone else does it, so we should be excused. But actually not everyone does what they are accused of having done. They really went out of their way to not tell the House of Commons what it is they were doing. They used a third-party printer, and the NDP paid for that in order to use envelopes that they sent across the country. You're not allowed to use these privileges for the benefit of a third party, and in this case, the benefit is to the NDP. And they really should pay the money back, and they should have done this months ago. I don't know why Mr. Mulcair has dug in his heels on this issue. It has only hurt the NDP.
Mr. Julian, the House leader, is saying this whole thing is a kangaroo court. It's undemocratic. And he's blaming his political opponents on the Board of Internal Economy. In fact, however, the weakness in that statement is the people who brought this forward to the Board of Internal Economy was the House administration. Under the clerk, Audrey O'Brien, a woman who's widely admired, is praised by Mr. Mulcair. So They are totally nonpartisan. Their job is to run the House of Commons. They were the ones who said, here's what the NDP did, and what they did was wrong. So I don't know what their case is for the NDP.
And I can certainly tell you why they're reluctant to do what they're to pay the money back, and that's because that's a lot of cash. Yeah. It's a lot of cash for the NDP. We've got an election year coming up next year. What's going to happen at this time next year? The House is going to break, and they probably won't come back for the summer. What's going to happen is all summer long they're going to be campaigning before the writ actually drops, which means all the parties are going to be able to spend scads of money, unless they don't have scads of money, because it's been taken away and they've had to pay it back for their franking costs.
Well, and it's not just this one. I mean, they're also being investigated by the House Procedure Affairs Committee and Board of Internal Economy later for those having satellite House of Commons staff working in NDP party offices in Montreal and Quebec City.
Satellite offices. From the mothership.
But this could be where the real hit is. They could have to pay back between $2 to $3 million on top of this other $1 million. That could pretty much bankroll.
Yes. And it's not just the money; it's the high ground, right? They cede the high ground on the issue too. They're going to be attacked at every turn by the Conservatives and the Liberals, as they have been now, having no ethical leg to stand on when they're criticizing either Senate spending or, you know, sponsorship or whatever the case may be.
But the fact of the matter is, we've seen the evidence. They've done it wrong, and they've trying to, you know, bluster their way through by pointing fingers everywhere else and hoping to confuse everybody. I did think, though, that Lisa Raitt, who was responsible for the Canada Post, was absolutely wrong in making a phone call to the head of the Canada Post saying, go after the NDP, get every red cent from them, when she's always out there saying, when it comes to cutting home delivery service, oh, we can't do that. Arm's length relationship.
But however, she only suggested to them that they do
a suggestion.
So, yeah.
But our boss, Kevin Crowell, calls you, George Cope calls you, suggested it.
Okay, that's right. I would do it. That's true.
All right. Let's move on to what I think is a really interesting Supreme Court decision that came down on Friday. It dealt with a case involving child pornography, but it has implications on the Hill for two pieces of legislation. And basically the court is saying, Tonda, you cover it so you can explain it a little better, but the court is saying that internet providers need a search, police need a search warrant to get online customer information from the big telecoms.
Right, and this is the whole question around what people call, you know, the very basic subscriber information, your name, your telephone number, your address. The information that a telecoms company has in their books related to your computer address. Everyone's got a unique signature on what they do. What the court has said basically is, look, people do live so much of their lives online now. Anonymity is a big part of what we regard as private information, and we like to be able to live our online lives anonymously. And the court is saying, if you're a police officer, you have grounds to believe there's a criminal offense, you only have to go get a warrant. You don't just get easy access to that stuff.
But for years, however, the telecoms and the police had made a deal that a search warrant wasn't needed. I think where we're going here is toward another conflict between the Supreme Court and the Prime Minister, but this one involving security and intelligence, which is so important to his government. And you've got to wonder how he responds this time.
Well, look, he's going to lose. The Supreme Court has said basically this cyberbullying bill, not the cyberbullying aspects, but the stuff dealing with internet privacy, is unconstitutional. Everybody has told them to split this bill, Gloria, including the new privacy commissioner, which Stephen Harper appointed, said split the bill.
This is not a government that takes direction easily, not from privacy commissioners or anybody else. And I don't think they're going to like to take it from the Supreme Court before the Supreme Court actually makes a ruling. This bill could go the way of the previous cyber bill that just sort of vanished off into the air. Or they could just decide to be bullheaded about it and push it through. Yeah. And if they do, well, they're going to have a big fight on
their hands. But, Althea, the government, the Justice Minister has been saying, we're going to push this thing through. We want this thing passed by the fall.
Yeah, I think they will push it through and then let the chips fall where they may. And it will be appealed. Clearly it will be, because it's just been deemed to be a charter breach. And then they'll have to do a clawback. But in the end, they will have fundraised lots of millions of dollars based on this bill.
Just let me raise one issue that maybe will require one of us to sound like we're a constitutional authority. But I believe that if the Supreme Court comes out with a ruling finally that Harper can't take it anymore, he can use the notwithstanding clause, can he not,
yes, he
to
can.
Overrule a Supreme Court?
Yes.
I think that's maybe the direction he's going in, and that may be why he started the fight with the Chief Justice in the first place.
He might not want to do the notwithstanding clause before an election.
Yeah, well, especially when you're looking at people's privacy. I mean, this is a government that had issue with the long-form census because they didn't think that the government should be snooping into people's privacy. We don't allow the police to come into our homes without a warrant. Do we want the police to be able to snoop around our internet without a warrant?
It's going to be a hard case for the government to make because the court is not saying you can't get this information. They're simply saying you have to go to a judge and justify why you want it. If there's law enforcement interests at stake here, justify your request.
The vast majority of Canadians are going to agree. It's the same thing that they can't come to your house and search or listen onto your phone unless they get a search warrant.
And I just want to point out, too, that the court did not deal with the question and did not strike down any power of the police to go in the case of an emergency if they deem a child is at risk, a criminal offense is occurring as they speak, as they're viewing it online, whatever the case may be. In those cases, police still have the power to go in without a warrant, request the data, and find the individual.
Much like they can go into your house if they believe that your children are at risk.
Okay, let's switch to the Ontario election campaign. Big surprise that Kathleen Wynne's government won a majority government.
Too bad Iveson's not here.
Mr. Iveson told us it was going to be Tim Hudak was going to win a majority government.
I have a chocolate crow in my back pocket.
However,
Mr. Oliver
did say that there would be a progressive, or there would be a majority Liberal government. I regarded the message of the Conservative leader as untenable at this point in time in Ontario. I think the Liberals could have been defeated by better thinking in terms of the Ontario economic policy being seen as more moderate and being more moderate. He blew that very badly. And then the NDP leader killed a budget which was widely supported by her own constituency. So the Liberals won the majority they did because the other two parties failed so dismally and incompetently.
Okay, Althea, do you think there's going to be anybody in the federal cabinet, Tony Clement or Lisa Raitt or Kelly Leach or John Baird, who'd be willing to go and step in on Ontario and try to save what looks to be a dying Conservative Party?
Yes, Progressive Conservative Party. I think Tony Clement will, of course, join the race because there's not a leadership race that Tony Clement doesn't want to run in.
And lose.
But I think it depends really on when the race occurs. If it happens after the next election, then people who, you know, maybe the Conservatives will be in opposition. Mm-hmm. And then Lisa Raitt will be looking at, well, you know, my chances of becoming Premier of Ontario are probably better than my chances of becoming Prime Minister.
Yeah.
So Lisa Raitt, Rick Dykstra even, Kelly Leach perhaps. There's a lot of strong performers here, actually, who could find a home in Ontario.
But they also may be thinking a little bit about that. You know, my friend Craig has been predicting that Mr. Harper is going to be taking his walk into the sunset for some time now.
Unless the numbers change. That was my proviso, and the numbers are starting to change a little.
But I think he's going to stick through the next election.
Okay.
But if he decides to stick through the next election, that's not that far away. Maybe he would. Maybe they are kind of whether it's better to think federally or provincially at this moment.
Okay, so what are the implications for the federal Conservatives? Does this help Trudeau to have a premier in Ontario who just won a fresh majority government, will be probably into a spring or summer election next year? Does this help Trudeau messaging to people in urban areas?
There's a whole bunch of ways this can cut, right? In a way, some might argue this helps Harper because Ontario likes to have a counterbalancing political party in government on the provincial side, Liberals, and when there's a strong Conservative option at the federal level. But it occurred to me today that this, in a way, it was Harper himself who kind of did in Hudak in having sold Canadians in large measure on the need for stimulus in tough economic times, not the need for a far-right measure. And Harper never went down that road. So in a way, you know, I don't know that, I'm not ready to call it, to be honest. I think this can cut several different ways. I think Justin Trudeau will be encouraged by it because, you know, the Liberals win and he was by her side. But no, I think this is yet to unfold. I'm not willing to call it.
The best lesson for Justin Trudeau is this. The oldest cry of the Liberal Party during elections used to be, a vote for the NDP will split the vote, and it's a vote for the Conservative Party. That worked in this Ontario mm-hmm. election, and it'll work in the federal election again, unless Mr. Mulcair can really get his act together and decide, is he going to move left, is he going to move right, or where is he going to move?
You know, some people are saying, look, Harper's going to be able to say, oh, look at this tax and spend government you got in Ontario, you don't want that. But you know what? Elizabeth Wynne is going to be able to do the exact same thing for the Liberal Party. She's going to be able to say, oh, look, Ottawa's treating us fairly in unfairly in Ontario under the Conservatives. If we only had a Liberal government in there, we might get a better fiscal break. You know, we might get more infrastructure money. We might be getting all these things would really help us out, Ontarians.
But, I mean, for the federal government or the Conservatives, they won Ontario. They won their majority in Ontario. And if the Liberals are competitive and they've got the support of a Liberal government, right. It may not be so
and
easy.
And it was blue Liberals. Liberals who voted for Harper to stop the NDP last time, to stop Jack Layton, who put him over the top. I don't think they're there in the next election, and this is a big problem for Mr. Harper in Ontario.
Okay, got to wrap it up here now. Fun chat. We'll be right back. We'll be watching for the government's decision on the Northern Gateway pipeline this week. And also keeping an eye out for Jason Kenney's highly anticipated changes to the temporary foreign workers program. For breaking political news, make sure to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and ctvnews.ca.